This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, there are a chosen few that will stand against the vampires, the demons, and the forces of darkness. These are the voyages of the crew of Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
And welcome once again to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. You are joined tonight by Sonia and Kaz, and we are talking specifically about queer sci-fi and horror. It's a special evening. We're going to be dissecting and digesting the medium of queer fiction in the horror and sci-fi genres. We're going to look at some of the origins. We're going to seek some answers from our special guest writer, Mary Borsellino, and how The Wolf House, her series of stories and books, are going. And they seem to be going particularly well with a recent announcement that they may be making it into hardback, which is fantastic news. And Mary's a Melbourne author, and it's got to be good for our local notoriety. And later on, we'll be taking a squiz at lesbian vampires, homosexual vampire stories, the very first known gay vampire story from 1884, and some of the origins of this particular type of horror literature. Other topics we're going to cover tonight will be movie makers from the past, directors like F.W. Murnau, James Whale, and how they queered the silver screen. We're going to look at subtexts of Hollywood horror, take a look at classic movies like Dracula's Daughter, Bride of Frankenstein, and some more contemporary ones with the adaptation of Anne Rice's Interview with the Vampire. We're also going to take a look at a bit of the tacky and exploitative when it comes to representations of the LGBTIQ community in books and on celluloid. Only here and now, tonight on Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Great. And welcome, Mary.
Hi.
How are you tonight?
I'm great.
Great. Thanks so much for coming up. Coming up to the studio and coming in at this time of the night.
Perfectly
seems perfect
right
to me. Yep. So first up for listeners to tonight's show, we are, as explained, looking at fiction of horror and sci-fi, and in particular queer things and writers and characters and film and that type of subject. Now, for listeners who don't know who you are, you're a writer, of course. Would you say that you write for teenage horror fiction? Would you say that's what it is? Well, or what would you call your particular
I'd say this fiction? Particular series is teenage horror fiction, or just teenage fiction, because, I mean, obviously it's a genre thing, but it's also got stuff apart from horror in it as well. In general, I do all kinds of writing. This is my first fiction series. My background's in academia and journalism, but I just, sometimes an idea grabs you and you have to go with it, so...
Yeah. Excellent. Okay, great. And how many books are there in the series, The Wolf House?
All up, there's going to be 5. I'm writing the 5th one at the moment. Once it's done, there'll be 5 all up. When released, they're being released in ebooks at the moment, but the hard version of the first 2 combined into 1 volume will be out in about 4 months. And then the back 3 will be in a second volume sometime after that, if I ever finish the 5th one.
Right. Okay. So one of the questions, I guess, is what is The Wolf House?
Okay.
Can you explain to people that may not?
Yep. Okay. The Wolf House is a series of young adult novels that are about sort of teenagers and vampires. And it's not exactly a Twilight backlash, but I do use the phrase Twilight for punks as a shorthand of what it is. I had the idea prior to reading Twilight, but it sort of morphed as Twilight took off and everything in the last couple of years, because I thought, well, Twilight's so focused on a particular kind of romance and a particular couple and a particular way that a teenager and a vampire could interact. And I thought, well, okay, but what if we take that basic idea of, you know, you put a teenager and a vampire together and you tell a love story, and what if you do it a completely different way? What if you look at it from a punk perspective, or a feminist perspective, or a queer perspective, or there's a thousand different voices that aren't addressed by Twilight, and I just felt like, where's the book for the rest of us? And
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was sort of the idea, and yeah, it came from there.
So in a way, Twilight kind of gave the, would you say, the trigger? Loaded gun that made you, you know.
Yeah. For some of the more political stuff, it is directly reactionary against Twilight. There's a lot of, like, I try to be kind of overtly sex positive and stuff in my books because I just feel like kids who are reading Twilight, there's such a bad message in so much of it, and I just wanted to sort of have a counter voice to that. So that stuff comes from reacting to Twilight, but a lot of it is just kind of, it's the vampire story that I wouldn't have wanted to read when I was a kid. It's what I would have died to have as a book when I was 14. And I figure, well, I can write it for people who are 14 now and write it exactly the way I would have then.
Good. We need that other, you know, that alternative diversity, I think, particularly in the horror fiction that's out there.
Well, it seems
much out there, and it seems quite...
It seems so sad that the horror genre, which is such a, you know, an outsider genre and, you know, an abject, I'll get it out there, genre, and that it's become so, I don't know, bland and white bread and safe, you know. Edward Cullen doesn't have fangs, like literally does not have fangs, and... I don't know. I think that's a really sad place for the genre to be so overwhelmingly. Of course there's a place for it because it should be this all-encompassing metaphor that anyone can access for whatever they need, but it shouldn't be the only voice going on. And I feel like really at the moment there's only Twilight and people trying to cash in on Twilight.
In terms of True Blood.
True Blood, yeah.
Older.
Yeah, no, there's certainly other things that are going on in the genre. I mean, you know, I made a blog post the other day that I actually had as its subject line, you say market saturation like it's a bad thing. I love that there's so many vampires around. Mm. I really do. But I feel like for young adults, they're really homogenized at the moment compared to, you know, the background. Like, I don't think many kids are reading Twilight and then going back and reading, you know, Stoker and Fanau. And I think that it's they're then reading the other books that are out at the moment, and there's not a lot of diversity in those books.
No, I mean, I would agree. It's not like Stephanie Meyer has a particular responsibility to write a certain way, but I'm glad that someone like yourself has decided that you're going to write something that's a lot more positive.
Yeah, no, for teenagers. I mean, I want to be really clear. I'm not hating on Twilight. Like, I think
we've talked about it on the show as well.
No, I think there's certainly a place for Twilight, and I do have an inordinate fondness for the first film. But I just feel like there's a lot of stuff. It doesn't mean I want to eat vanilla ice cream every day. I think it's a real pity that people seem to think that because it's so staggeringly huge, that's now all we need from the genre for kids.
Exactly. We'll come back. We've just got some messages. Mm-hmm. We'll come back and we'll talk more about some of the characters and maybe some of the favourite characters that you have built up in the series. You're listening to Sonia and Kaz and Mary, our special guest, on Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9. Welcome back to Sci-Fi and Squeam with Kaz and Sonia, and we have Mary here in the studio, and she's talking about The Wolf House.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back.
Hello. Thank you for having me back after, you know, 10 seconds.
A 10-second break. Okay, now... tell us about the characters. Which would be... Do you have favourites in the series?
I don't know. It changes, like, because I write... Because each of the books is from kind of two POVs. They're in third person, but they follow particular characters. And so whichever book I'm reading at a particular time, I'll... You know, because I have to get inside their heads so much and follow their motivations that I just end up adoring them, even if they're total scumbags. I don't know. So I'll just tell you about some of the characters from the early ones. The first book is from the perspective of two teenagers whose names are Bette and Jay. And they're in high school, they're 16 years old, and they fall in love with some vampires, they meet some vampires, and it's just about kind of history and the you know, when you're 16, you've actually kind of lived a lot, especially if you've had a kind of rough childhood, which a lot of my characters have had, because I did want to sort of address that. Well, you don't kind of, you don't spontaneously wake up a punk one day kind of thing, that it sort of, you, that Bette in particular has a lot of kind of just anger in her personality. It's not that, you know, she's got unresolved issues or anything. It's just that the particular life she's led has meant that there's a lot of rage going on, and it's sort of, you know, how I feel like that there's a lot of stuff about being a teenager that's not nice and not pretty, and that it's, I think that it's important to kind of acknowledge, if you're writing about teenagers, that not all of them are kind of prom queens or anything, and that a lot of them are really angry and messed up and doing angry and messed up things. And so that's kind of who Bette is. Jay is, he's a bit more of a laconic character. He's very much kind of the cool kid, the bitchy cool kid. And he's kind of the heart of, he's the human half of the vampire love story that runs through the five books. He basically gets seduced by this vampire named Blake, and Blake is not Edward Cullen. Blake is much closer to Dracula in terms of, you know, he's very powerful, he's very old, and he's
gorgeous. He kills, by the looks of it.
And he kills people. And I, you know, I wanted a bad vampire to be part of a love story because, okay, I think teenagers have less of a problem, or some damaged teenagers have less of a problem with that as a concept in people than adults would sometimes like them to. And so I wanted to look at, well, okay, if you've got a teenager and a vampire in love and the vampire actually is evil and the teenager's okay with that, then what happens from there?
Interesting point. And the Jay character, there's that bisexuality as well that's in there.
Nearly all my characters are bisexual. It free floating in a lot of ways. There's a couple of genderqueer characters as well. Bette's best friend, and sort of they begin to kind of have this doomed romance as things goes on. Her name's Rose, and she's not, she doesn't think that she's
Is that book three? Is that Fair Game?
Yeah, Fair Game's the one that Timothy, who's the, it's Bette and Timothy who are the point of view characters in the third one. And Timothy is the other character who's genderqueer. And he's very into queer core and zine culture and things like that. And sort of that's the other thing I wanted to sort of address, because, you know, my teenage years are behind me now, but I remember being so fascinated and entranced with Riot Girl and with zine culture and things like that. And I wanted to sort of have that as an aspect, because I think that that messiness isn't as readily accessible in a lot of modern, even teen underground stuff. And I, that I wanted to have that as something that is in the books. So. Yeah.
It was definitely a subculture, and now it seems to be, like, gone, plateaued and mainstream.
Yeah.
But maybe a lot of younger people don't know some of the origins of where it comes from. Is that what you're trying to say in these books?
Sort of, that I wanted to have a lot of things from the past. Because so much of my vampire stuff is influenced by older texts, and so that they're the kind of an opening door to that, that I mean, it's not a vampire story, but a gothic story that I reference a lot is Picture of Dorian Gray.
Yeah.
And I also have a lot of stuff about Frankenstein. Old horror movies feature in every book pretty heavily. And old horror movie background and things like that. And Bette's obsessed with Frankenstein and with Mary Shelley, and that plays really heavily. Because I wanted to have, you know, as well as being a book for kids who didn't fit into Twilight, for it to be an educative tool, that there's other stuff out there they might be interested in. And so, yeah, there's queer core stuff and zine culture and Riot Girl. Like, Rose is a riot girl who's not sure she's a girl. And just because I wanted there to be all kinds of different things that kids can then go, oh, I want to find out more about that.
It's interesting she's got a name like Rose, which is a very gothic, I mean, you know, it's a yeah. very feminine name.
Yeah.
And yet she's sort of yeah. not sure.
Yeah.
It's interesting that you have that in there as a character.
Yeah.
Played against that.
Yeah. I think that it's interesting that you should mention the names, because I put a lot of thought into the names I give my characters, and then people are like, oh, I didn't even think of that. Like, Bette. You know, Beauty and the Beast is Belle and Bette. And we've got Bella Swan in Twilight, who's so mainstream. And this is like, no, I'm telling the story about the Beast. I've got no time for the beauty.
She's so clumsy. Yeah.
She falls out of windows.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. So who would you... You mentioned Mary Shelley before. Who would you say would be some other writers that have influenced that you?
Well, okay, when I was... Like, I know that kids of all ages will read this stuff, and I consider myself a kid as well, even though I'm 28. But when I was 14, L.J. Smith's Vampire Diaries, they were just my thing. They were my jam, and how they've been turned into a CW show, which is apparently hugely popular. Mm. But I haven't seen all of it yet. But no, those books... I loved, and yeah, again, they got me interested in Italian Renaissance stuff because they had a lot of that in it, and that I think vampire stories can be such great history teaching tools for kids because it actually gets you interested. I would never have known half as much as I do about kind of, you know, New Orleans and the French Quarter and stuff if not for Anne Rice and Poppy Z. Bright and things like that. And so
exactly.
yeah. Yeah, so L.J. Smith, Anne Rice, I read a lot of rubbish. I'm not saying those books are rubbish, I'm just saying that most of the books, vampire books that I read, I wouldn't necessarily jump to recommend to people because I'm not sure that they're actually good, I just love them.
Mm. No, and when you're involved with your own writing, you do look around at everything else, I guess, that's going on around.
Yeah, I do.
Including graphic novels. Do you have a favourite graphic one? Or?
Oh, I'm a huge comic books reader. I did my master's on comics. I like the 30 Days of Night comics, just in terms of vampire stuff and on horror stuff and everything. I think that they're really evocatively drawn and really beautiful to look at.
And horrific.
And horrific, they are actually scary. And their vampires are actually scary looking.
Yeah.
I would say that. I haven't read The Walking Dead yet. I hear really good things about The Walking Dead, though.
Okay, cool. Excellent. Oh, and what about movies? You mentioned horror movies.
Yeah.
Like the older style?
Yeah,
older.
So there's a lot of sort of Bride of Frankenstein and original Dawn of the Dead and things like that feature. Lots of Argento, which I personally can't watch. I love horror movies. I adore horror movies, but Argento is like one of the very few directors who just hits my button
Dario
or something.
Argento.
Yeah,
I know it's difficult the first couple of times, but you have to watch Suspirio and Inferno. You need to watch them in a row. And
I really appreciate him as an artist. I just
stylistically,
personally,
amazing.
I just I don't know.
But they're a bit crazy.
Yeah, no, my brother's a huge fan, but I'm just like no. Not for me, but the early Romero stuff and the real classic ones like Dracula and Nosferatu and Cabin of Dr. Caligari and all of that stuff.
Yep.
Just because, I think that there's such a richness and that there's also such a subcultural thing around those films now that to be into that particular kind of movie is in itself kind of an identity branding. That I sort of wanted for my characters and for Bette in particular, that, she's so into these movies and that really influences the way she reacts to the world now and things like that.
Yeah, I have a friend and he pretty much is a Dario Argento character. And I've been thinking, where do you get these lines from? And now I know.
Yeah.
It's disturbing, but it's fun. It's interesting that people do that.
And it's not a movie, but one TV show that I think is a really, really awesome vampire story at the moment is the BBC series Being Human.
Yeah,
excellent series.
It's fantastic.
I love that one.
Yeah. No,
really
I'd have to say that's, of all the vampire stuff being made at the moment,
for
that's
TV?
Probably my favourite. Yeah. Yeah.
It's so lo-fi.
Yeah, I know, compared
that
to
is
like
so good.
True Blood and Vampire Diaries and everything, but it's by far the strongest.
It's the story.
Yeah.
It's really strong, I think, and it goes all the way through. Kaz, you really liked that.
Oh, I love that series. The second series has just started in the UK, and I'm exciting. Really looking forward to it coming out on DVD here.
Yep. There's five episodes out.
Yes.
I've
resisted the less legal means of watching them. But yeah, series one, I recommend to everybody.
Yeah, no, it's at ABC Shops, but yes, I'll just put in a plug. But yeah, because I love that. And I think that, it really does stand up above the rest as it's got, I don't know. It's funny. It's one of those ones. There's a couple around at the moment that I've just found recently, and I'm like, wow, if I'd known this existed when I started writing the books, I might not have even bothered writing the books because it's saying so much of what I wanted to say. Mm-hmm. And actually, a couple of friends of mine told me, oh, you know, leave off watching Being Human until you finish the fifth book because it's so, some of the stuff is close to what you're doing and whatever, but I couldn't resist.
Once you start it,
you've
got to watch it through the end.
You got to mainline it.
Cool. I think we'll play a bit of music. We'll have a little bit of a break. I'm going to play Smashing Pumpkins' Eye.
Hooray!
Hey, and you're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9.
Vampires, zombies, ghouls and creatures from outer space. No, it's not Federal Parliament. It's Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9.
Welcome back. You're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam with Kaz, Sonia and Mary Borsellino, who's kindly come in to talk about her passion and also her books.
Yep.
The Wolf House. And that was, what was that again?
That was I by Smashing Pumpkins.
Yes, Smashing Pumpkins. I had to think about that one.
So, Mary, we've talked to you about how your books are going and you're looking at getting published in the next few months, which is fantastic. But what's next on the horizon for you after you've written the fifth one?
Oh, God, I don't even know. I don't know. I've got some ideas for more novels that I'd like to write, so hopefully more of them. I don't know. This one's been so grueling that I think I just want to kind of sleep for a year. I do journalism work, so I'll be doing. I want to do more music journalism now that I won't have this looming thing of must write fiction whenever I have a free moment. More words.
Yeah, no, you are pretty much chained to the computer when you're writing a series.
Yeah, so. Which is, it's very fulfilling, but it's exhausting.
How long has it been since you, well?
I signed the contract October 2008, finished the first book end of December 2008. And just been ticking away since book five. I've kind of been dragging my feet on a bit, sort of.
Hey, yeah. You can indulge a bit. Resting, you know.
Yeah,
you're but, human.
I guess. Well, probably a little bit, but yeah, no. It's been great. I've really enjoyed it, but it has been a bit of a breakneck. I don't know. I'd like to. I published these deliberately through a micropress because I wanted to have the creative control, and it has meant it's taken a bit of a while to get to print. But it's been really, really rewarding to have that creative control and not have to be dictated by market whims so much. Because I do have, like, because I work in, I publish a lot of stuff in anthologies and in academic books and, like, essay collections and stuff, and just the having to count out of what's popular all the time. And, you know, at the moment, God, if I was trying to write a series about queer vampire teenagers for the mainstream, I mean, so much of the stuff I've got in there that my publisher kind of, you know, makes a few noises about but lets me get away with, I never could if I was with a bigger publisher. I might make more money, but I'd have to sacrifice so much of why I was writing these books. And that kind of means that I'm torn with, you know, people say, oh, with the next book you could go to a real publisher and make real money and stuff. You know? And it's like, yeah, but I've had so much freedom on these that the thought of going and having to bend so much, it sounds so disheartening to even think about that I'm not sure what I'll do next. So,
Which brings me to a question about you mentioned on your site, on your website, that you listen to certain types of music that get you in the mood, basically.
I sure do. Yep.
Yeah. Tell us a bit about that.
Okay. I'm pretty upfront about the fact that even though the aesthetic of the books is really kind of old school punk and riot girl, and I do listen to a lot of that stuff, I also like some fairly I guess you'd call them mainstream or whatever. I'm a huge My Chemical Romance fan, big Fallout Boy fan. I listen to them a lot. They really do influence me. I Yeah, I actually have a playlist on my website that's got a lot of the songs that have in some way influenced me when I write, and I have a Tumblr where I just stick images that have somehow influenced me, because I think that it's, you know, I'm such a bowerbird with ideas. I get them from everywhere. You know, a line in a song will influence a line in the book, and then, you know, some people who, but I mean, Stephanie Meyer does that as well, sometimes with the same songs.
Yeah, she's appropriated my favourite band in the world.
Which band is that?
Muse. I was not happy about that.
No, but it's actually so funny, because in one of the books, Edward buys Bella concert tickets, and if you match up the times and where they are and stuff, you work out he's bought her tickets to the Muse My Chemical Romance show, and I'm just like, no! What are you doing?
Stay away from this one.
It's a cocktail, yes.
Yes.
And do you have any queer fiction favourites? Do you have a look at those?
Yeah, I'm a big Patrick Calafia fan, fiction and non-fiction. He's a huge inspiration to me, both as a writer and as sort of an activist and just in general. So really love his stuff. I'm trying to think. I don't know. I read a lot of erotica, and because I write erotica, and I read a lot of it. So, I don't know. Narelle Harris, who's another Melbourne writer who I'm actually friends with, she's got some queer fiction that I really enjoy. She writes. She used to write queer detective stories. Now she writes. She's got a vampire series that's going on at the moment. The first one's out, and the second one's coming out soon. They have an adorable vampire in them named Gary, he's got a Twitter. She's made him a Twitter.
Oh, wow.
And
nice.
I like to talk to Gary on Twitter because I'm fond of him. So I don't know. I read a lot of kind of non-professional stuff online, like stories people post in their journals and things. And a lot of that is written by queer women, and there's this big problem with sort of a lack of legitimacy that some of them have even sort of attacked me for selling stuff, you know, the selling out in some way, because my books, they're charged, and even though they're still ebooks. And so it's like, well, some of your words on a screen are for free. Why are you charging for these? And it's like, well, because they're actually books. I spent a really long time writing them, and I'd like some money. And I'm actually totally okay with piracy. Like, my publisher would stab me for saying it. But
hopefully they're not listening.
Well, they're in Ohio, so
no,
probably not.
Probably not.
But I'm totally – I just want my books read, but I do want them – to be seen as books, kind of thing, and that's basically, I wanted to prove I could go through a publisher.
And you need to sustain yourself. That's important.
I wouldn't worry about it. Most people are fine with paying for
books. I think that's the thing, because I come out of this culture of kind of, a lot of it's based in fan fiction and academia and stuff, where people are kind of like, you know, oh, somehow, you know, our love or our ideas they're purer than money, and then that.
Trust me, if someone came up to them with a checkbook.
But then the funny thing is that some of the best-selling authors in the world come from that world, and I just find it really strange that, you know, I could tell you stories about people who are in the top 10 bestseller lists who I know, you know, they write porn fiction on the internet too, but, you know, they don't somehow get vilified for turning around and making a stack of money off it. So I don't know, it can be a double-edged sword, that I'm so grateful for that world, but then it can be quite vicious. So
another interesting thing, I was looking on your website, and Audrey Fox, the artist, tell us a bit about how you met her and how she got involved. Seem to fit perfectly.
Auds is, she's wonderful. We actually, the funny thing was, we have a mutual friend who lives in San Francisco who came over here in like 2004 or 2003 or something, and she stayed with the household I was living in at the time, and she went to see Audrey while she was visiting as well, because they were really close. And then like a couple of years later, Audrey and I found each other completely independently and sort of met and clicked and became friends. And then our friend in San Francisco is like, oh, I'm so glad you two found each other, you know. And we're just like, okay, so you knew we'd get along. Why didn't you ever introduce introduce us. Wow. You knew us years ago. Eh? Yeah, but no, Audrey and I, we became friends through comic books because we were both really big in comic books. She sent me some drawings she'd done based on one of my stories, and I just thought they were awesome, and we just kind of collaborated off the cuff. It was the original idea for the Wolf House came while it was for a Supernova convention, actually. We were up in Brisbane for a Supernova convention, and we just started riffing ideas off each other while we were stuck on a train one night. And it just kind of bloomed from there. And, yeah, she's I think she's entirely self-taught. And, yeah, she's just got
and
a great
style. And the T-shirts
style.
Look great.
Yeah, I love the T-shirts.
So people can buy those online?
Yeah,
on
and
your
some
website,
of my friends or? Wear them, and I get really embarrassed. Okay. But no, I really love the T-shirts. Audrey makes all the money off them, which, you know, I'm really happy about, that she gets. She has this opportunity to make some money off her amazing work. The one I really love, the one I actually own, is that she's made a fake T-shirt for one of the bands from the books for one of their tours, and I just adore that because I know I just find that so geeky and awesome that no one will know what I'm wearing, and then
they're great.
That's fantastic. Sonia's just passed me a picture.
Yep, that
of some of the merchandise.
Yeah,
looks
that
fantastic.
That one's Bette and Rose, and that one's Lily and Will. They're the obviously people on the radio can't see this, but
so go to the website. Yeah,
no, but it looks awesome.
But yes,
definitely. That's the band one.
Ah, fantastic! Yeah,
it's a great concept. Excellent.
No, I love them, and I love the way Audrey draws my characters because it's just like I know some of them, like in the second book, you meet this girl. She's basically. She's very much a drifter, and she wears like this grubby trench coat, and she's really kind of, she's this angry, dirty little 14-year-old girl, and just I never thought anyone could draw her perfectly. And then Audrey, I mean, people have actually kind of left comments for Audrey saying, "How did you draw Sophie exactly like she is in my head?" Yeah. And Audrey's like, "I've got powers."
Well, the credit has to go to you for creating a character.
Oh, I don't know. Audrey manages. Well. Somehow to evoke them exactly how they've been in my head, even with details that I didn't write down. So,
And she did the business cards too?
She did the design that's on the business cards. Mm. Yeah. I got the business cards printed up just because I wanted to be able to give something to people with the URL on them. I think there's a stack. There's usually a stack in the Joy foyer. So if you're around.
I better check to make sure that they are stacked up there. So where can people buy the books?
Okay,
that's the important one.
At the moment, you can get them online at thewolfhouse.net. No hyphens or anything, just as one word, thewolfhouse.net. Or Google it. It's like the first hit, I think. If you don't want to, you know, pay the couple of bucks or whatever, email me. I'm sure we can work out something. Percy. because I just want them read. And they are coming out in, the actual hard copy in about 4 months, and I've already talked that they'll be in readings when it's out in Carlton.
Beautiful. We'll have to get you back on so you can autograph that copy.
And probably in Hares and Hyenas as well. But readings I've already talked.
Well, that's where I saw you at Hares and Hyenas.
Yeah.
You were first up on the stage.
I
that
sure was.
Probably a bit rough.
Yeah.
But you were amazing, and there were some great people there that evening, and that was part of the Midsummer Queer Festival, which was really cool. It's been really good talking to you, actually.
Well, thank you. Thanks.
Being
a great. Blithered, but I do that.
No, that's fine. It's fine. So I suggest people go to the Wolf House site and have a good look around that.
That's right.
And also go to the Facebook.
Go to our Facebook page. We've actually popped the link up on our Facebook page.
Oh, okay.
So you can go straight to that and head straight to Mary's site. And it has been absolutely fantastic having you on.
Oh, well, it's been absolutely fantastic on. I hope I can come back again sometime.
We'll definitely get you back on when the book comes out.
Awesome.
Yeah. Do you know anything about the cover yet?
I do a bit. Audrey and I were talking about it on the weekend while we were at Pride, actually. We're standing out in the bright sunshine.
Blistering
day.
Oh my God.
Yeah, because our friend got heatstroke.
I got sunburned.
Our friend got heatstroke, and so she was in the medical van. And we were sitting out in the tent next to the van for like 45 minutes, and so we planned out the
Might
whole cover.
Some work.
So we planned out the cover. So I do know what it looks like, and Audrey's taken the modelling shots that she's based her drawing on and stuff. Her poor put-upon sister had to pose for it and stuff. So it is in the works, yeah.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah. Well, thanks again. No, it's been
thank
great
you.
Having you
thank
on.
You.
And you're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam with Kaz, Sonia, and our special guest was Mary Borsellino tonight on Joy 94.9. I think we'll have a bit of music and then we'll be coming back and talking more about films and, yeah, the stuff that we always talk about here. You're listening to Joy.
In space, no one can hear you scream. On Joy 94.9, it's a different story. Sci-Fi and Squeam, Thursday nights, 11 to 1, on Joy 94.9.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.